This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town. Your suburb.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Georgie Coghlan.
Stop calling and maybe stop texting on your telephone when you're at the theatre. It sounds like a pretty simple request, doesn't it? Yet, award-winning actress Rosamund Pike recently felt compelled to remind audience members to put their phones away after she spotted someone texting during a very emotional scene she was doing in her live performance. So is theatre etiquette dead? We've been here before. Have we forgotten how to sit quietly and just immerse ourselves in a story, a play, an experience? Or are we simply too addicted to our devices? Also today, do your kids know what squash is? Now, I'm talking about the sport, not the drink. Did your parents play squash? Have you ever stepped onto a squash court? It was once one of Australia's most popular sports, but squash participation has been declining and players say a lack of funding isn't helping. So we're asking, can squash make a comeback? Is it still thriving or is it in danger of disappearing? And finally, are you planning on watching any birds this weekend? I'm not joking. A growing number of Australians are swapping endless scrolling for bird watching. They're heading outdoors to spot and identify our feathered friends. So what is it about bird watching that's capturing so many people? And have you joined the flock? I'm Georgie Coghlan. This is The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria.
Keeping the conversation going.
This is The Conversation Hour.
Quiet. I like silence, but not really silent. Just that still sort of quiet. Like the sound of a page being turned in a book.
So picture this. You're in the theatre, you may be with your family, your grandchildren or your friend, and you're witnessing this particularly beautiful scene from Matilda the musical. It's where Matilda sings the solo piece you just heard, Quiet, which reflects her need to escape her chaotic and traumatic life. Someone sitting next to you starts texting on their phone. So the phone light takes you out of the moment. Oh, and then another patron then decides to open a noisy chip packet and starts crunching on crisps. And then the person behind you begins to talk loudly to their friend. It drives me mad. So today we're talking about theatre etiquette. Is theatre etiquette gone? Now, this all comes off the back of award-winning English actress Rosamund Pike recently having to address the audience after she was performing in the play Inter Alia. Now, this play is written by our very own incredible Australian playwright, Susie Miller. It deals with family abuse, and in a particularly emotional scene, the actress, Rosamund Pike, noticed someone sending a text. So at the curtain call, Rosamund Pike reminded the audience that she's trying to tell a story. What she is trying to express is a huge thing, that she's giving us a performance and that she's feeling us, and she hopes that we feel her too. Here's a little of what she had to say at the curtain call.
Just as Harry was confessing and was on the floor, was texting in this part, you know who you are, and I'm not going to single you out, but, you know, it's a kind of... It upsets, and maybe it was very important, and maybe you're a doctor and you're saving someone's life, and I hope you are. But just that we do see these, we do feel them. I've got you. I feel like I have to hold you all, and so when I feel that and see it, it's hard.
So what do you think? Is she right? If we have to compete with pinging phones or people texting, people eating loudly, does everyone suffer? she's clearly showing us and telling us there that the performers suffer. Do the people paying high ticket prices, particularly today, suffer? But have mobile phones completely changed our ability to consider others and be still? Well, Jody Bash-McLean is an etiquette expert and the director of the June Daily Watkins. And she's also a theatre cinema behaviour expert in particular. Jody, thank you so much for joining us on The Conversation Hour. Do you think Rosamund Pike was right to address the audience after that?
Oh, hi, Georgie. Yes, I applaud her. I think we have to start, I don't want to say calling people out, but I think we need to comment on behaviour that's inappropriate or bad behaviour. It's that, I guess it's that analogy that we say, you know, good manners is all about what you do and controlling your behaviours, and you can't control what other people do. But in a closed environment, in a shared space especially, if we say nothing, nothing changes, and we need to be reminded. We don't need to be chastised, but we need to be reminded that these behaviours can cause offence. Mm. And, you know, I think it just comes back to that sense of self and being a little bit too selfish, because we have this inner world of our own and we're quite comfortable there, and we tend to take that whole dynamic with us when we go out into the big wide world, and we forget.
So, Jody, do you think that theatre etiquette is getting worse, or is it just that we're noticing it more?
I think we're noticing it more. I think I don't think theatre etiquette is getting worse. I think behaviour is getting worse. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a serious issue at hand about addiction to our mobile phone, to devices, that, you know, it's one of the first things we grab when we walk from one room to the other. You know, if we leave the house, heaven forbid, without our mobile phone. And I do know that, we use it. It's become like another appendage. We use it to pay for things. It tells us where to go. It entertains us, and we're losing the ability to just leave it behind and go out and do it the old-fashioned way.
Let's go to Blair from Ivanhoe. Good morning, Blair. What would you like to say? Oh, hang on, just 2 seconds, Blair. We're coming. Hi, Blair in Ivanhoe. What would you like to say?
Hi, Georgie. I actually think that theatre etiquette has been gone downhill for 10, 15 years now. Theatre is my happy place. I love musicals, and there was one musical when I went to see Cats with Delta Goodrum, mm-hmm. and there was a person with texting on the phone. They had their little earpiece flashing. They had fans blowing. They had and they had people talking. And what I was going to say is it's very distracting for the actors. And then last thing I would say is that you go to the theatre to have that human feeling and that connection to the story and that. And I remember talking to an usher, and she said, well, what's the point of buying a ticket if you're not going to actually enjoy it and be present and have those theatre feelings? Mm. It's just disappointing. And I also want to say that Leslie Manfield, who won the Tony for Oedipus recently, she actually came out and said, don't take photos, enjoy the play and not through the lens of your phone.
Mm. Yes.
And she called it out at the end of her play as well.
Blair, would you have said anything, albeit politely, to the person next to you that had the phone on?
Yeah, I have no qualms, because I've paid for that ticket. It's been disturbed. I've even raised it with ushers at intermission. I'm very comfortable, because it's like that they are not showing the respect that they need to and consideration to others.
Thank you for your call, Blair. We appreciate that. And any ushers that are listening, we'd love to hear from you. 1-300-222-774. I'm talking to Jody Bash-McLean. She's an etiquette expert. Jody, I had an experience in a Ballarat theatre. So I was watching Hamnet, as you know, a very emotionally rich, deep film, very moving. And there was quite, spoiler alert, but there was quite a tragic scene. And two people next to me at that point decided to open their chip packet and crunch. And I'm a bit of a Karen when it comes to this, because my point was I shouted myself to a day at the theatre. I wasn't watching it at home. I go to experience. So I just turned and went, shh, And they looked at me, but they stopped. And then the guy, about 5 minutes later, a guy next to me pulled out his phone. So I get distracted by the light. And I did say to him, Jodie, I said, excuse me, can you please get off your phone? And in fairness to him, he was lovely because he sort of said, oh, I'm so sorry. I think it was just that habit of his brain checking that dopamine hit. Mm. And he apologised and he put it away straight away. And I was such a grump. But it is such a beautiful film. I didn't want to be distracted.
And I think, you know, power to you, Georgie, for doing that. And I think we have to remember, if we are going to ask someone, we do it politely. We make sure that the way that we converse with another is not through anger. I sort of love that saying, be curious, not furious. So sort of talk to them in a way and say, oh, look, that light's distracting me. Would you mind turning off your mobile phone? Or, or you know, even a shush sometimes with the chips. It's such a difficult situation because the theatre wants you to buy the chips. They want you to buy the popcorn.
Now, why is this, is the question that my husband wanted to ask you. He said, why do theatres sell noisy food packaging? Aren't they almost saying that it's okay?
There needs to be a lesson that's freely available to all on how to open a chip packet during a performance or a movie. Do it beforehand. That's a great idea. The other one is wait for some music event or something loud crashing that you can open the packet. I mean, I must admit, I'm really conscious, so I don't bother. So for those that 90 minutes or 120 minutes, I try to abstain from anything noisy. I'll drink, you know, some water perhaps. But I think it's something about we need to be more conscious. You know, speaking about different actors doing different things, I mean, it is becoming increasingly worse. So whether there's a reminder at the beginning of the performance, I was reading on one of the Broadway websites about, and they do, they in the etiquette rules are there. There was even a story that was posing one option is that phones do not come into the performance. Mm. You're invited to attend, and it does state that they want you to take the ownership of not having a phone. It's a unique opportunity to create connection, but if you refuse to leave your phone behind, you can't be admitted.
Oh, I love that, Jodie. Actually, maybe
so
we'll get to that point.
Hard road.
Yes.
Maybe. I hope so.
Well, that was funny. That reminds me, I went to the Wicked premiere of both movies, and the first one in particular, we had to hand over our phones. And it was so liberating. So we sat there for 2.5 hours. No one moved. No teenager moved. Everyone was engaged. No one had the phone. So you thought, oh, I got no phone anyway. And obviously it was an incredible film. But that reminded me, yes, people can do it. People's attention span can still stay 2.5 hours if you're not distracted. Let's go to Daniel in Ormond. Good morning, Daniel. What do you think about theatre etiquette?
Good morning. I love the theatre. I've got a Melbourne Theatre Company subscription and regularly attend the theatre. And I obviously dislike people when they interrupt the performances. But I know it's common practice now to obviously tell people to turn their mobile phones off. And I think it'd be really helpful to people if you went through further etiquette before the show, because I think theatre's trying to attract a new audience and there's often lots of people there who may never have been to a theatre performance before.
Yes, okay.
And we shouldn't just assume they know the etiquette. So saying to them beforehand, you know, don't talk during the performance, please don't use your phone, please be mindful of the people around you, just sets them up for enjoying the play.
Well, you're right, because sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And, Daniel, I was raised in a, you know, really, we went to theatre all the time. Probably 5 was my first time I went to the theatre. So my mother had really clear boundaries about the theatre, that we weren't allowed to talk. There's no way we were allowed to eat. And I think that's right. You can bring people along with you, can't you, rather than naming and shaming. We've got another great text. Thank you so much, Daniel, for your call. Have a fantastic day. Some fantastic texts coming through. Bad theatre etiquette. Patrons leave their wrappers, cups, rubbish behind on seats or in the aisle. It's appalling behaviour and shows no respect or appreciation to other patrons. I'm going to the ballet today at the Regent and hoping things have changed. That's from Karina in Queenscliff. And we've also got Marsha from Warrandyte. My mother taught me that we never ever take food or drink into live theatre or music out of respect for the performers and other patrons. It's just not correct. We hardly had food in a movie cinema. There you go.
I think that's a good point. I think, you know, theatres are trying to make us not they're trying to stay alive. So whether the cost of the ticket is what it is, but it's sort of supported by what you buy going in. But I think that's a great idea. Sending with the ticket the reminder of what the rules are for this performance, the etiquette rules, the behaviours they'd like you to adopt, and also perhaps not selling anything that you can take in that's noisy. It's water.
I'm talking with Jodie Bash-McLean. She's an etiquette expert. Jodie and I are thrashing out whether we need to bring back etiquette into theatres. Jodie, do you think one of the challenges is that we had COVID, we're used to watching our streaming services at home, so we're in our trackies. Mm. We can talk, we can go to the toilet, we can pause, we can rewind, we can check our phones, we can be having something to eat. Do you think that there's part of us has just forgotten that we behave around people and that our behaviour affects others?
I think 100%. I think COVID does get blamed for a lot of things, but when it comes to this learned behaviour of being insular, I think it comes back to that time. It comes back to the time that we can sit at home and be watching a movie, and it's practice that we will look at our phone. The movie might be a bit slow for a moment, or we hear a little ping that reminds us that there's a message waiting and we need to read it immediately because the world will end if we don't. And I think it's a learned behavior, so we have to, it's almost like a relearning. We know the behaviors. Australians are wonderful people. We know the correct behaviours, but we need the reminders. And it is, you will find most times when someone is, I guess, not their memory's jogged, or someone will say, oh, can you not do that? They'll go, oh, yes, of course, sorry. And that's their immediate response. We know what we should be doing. We just need reminding.
Let's go to Lynn from the Mornington Peninsula. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. How are you going?
Very well. What are your thoughts on etiquette in the theatre, Lynn?
Well, I'm agreeing with everything. But I had an experience. I've got feedback. Have you got feedback?
No, we're good from this end, but okay. Do you have your radio off?
No, I haven't got. I've just got my phone on.
Okay, we'll fix it up for you. We'll go to another person. We'll come back to you, Lynn. 2 seconds.
Okay. Try this. Is that better?
It's fine for us. That's good. Let's try that, Lynn.
So I'm at the movies with my friend, and there's a lady down the end of my seat, down the end of the row, and, she was just eating chips and unwrapping. And it was so noisy. So I did all the body language stuff,
the huffing and puffing.
And then eventually it just went on. So eventually I said, excuse me, please, could you stop? So that was fine. And at the end of the movie, she got up and walked towards me. And I thought she was coming to apologise. Mm-hmm. And she stood over me and she berated me. And then as she left, as she was walking up the steps, she kept calling out, how dare you? How dare you speak to me like that?
Oh, that's tricky, Lynn. Maybe that's where it wouldn't be a nice job, would it, to be an usher? But maybe that's where we've been talking, Lynn, about whether there are boundaries at the start of the film. Please consider others with your paper, not talking, your phone. Maybe then we can be able to say, well, it's not actually about a personal attack. It's just that's what the etiquette requirements are for watching something.
I think it would be good if there's some, apart from a mobile phone, there's some reminder about chips or that. And paper wrappers. I mean, I was at the movies recently and I almost went over and thumped the two girls in front of me because I just thought, will you stop it? Aren't you listening to the movie? It was just chips and papers and popcorn and...
And sometimes sometimes I think, you look at teenagers, they're not meaning sometimes, not all teenagers, but sometimes they're just being teenagers and they're thoughtless, they're not thinking about it. But that's where I think those boundaries might really help them be a little bit more considerate. We go to the theatre people and say, please don't sell noisy packaging.
But when it's a really, like you were talking before, really quiet, really sensitive scene, there's not a sound, and then someone decides to pop their chip bag.
Well, Lynn, I hope the next time you go to the theatre is more enjoyable. Thank you for your call.
I'm not in therapy. I'm okay.
Thank you, Lynn. Let's go to Paul from St Kilda East. Good morning, Paul. Hello, Paul.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Everyone can hear you. What are your thoughts on etiquette, Paul?
Look, I think this is a really interesting topic. And having been on both sides of that, I know what it's like both to be interrupted, but also to be an interrupter. and it's a salutary lesson that we all have to learn at some stage. But I wanted to broaden this a little bit because I think there's some other things that really are contextual about all of this as well. At the top of the interview, your guests talked about the fact that, we take our mobile phones with us everywhere we go, which is true. One of the things I'd like to point out is that we are so encouraged and incentivized by a paperless world to download our tickets onto our phones. Impossible to go to a concert, the football, whatever you like, without having a mobile phone with you. So the practicality is really makes it impossible not to take it with you.
And
so that's one point I'd like to make. The other is that simply that I've seen this going on for many, many years, as we all have. And what I detect has actually taken it to the next level. And some people will probably say that I will not like what I'm about to say.
No, look at
that. Is the role of content creators who try to insert themselves into somebody else's event situation by making commentary as it's happening, as a way of promoting themselves. And to my mind, and I've seen this happen more and more, this has actually taken it to next level.
Yes. Well, they're two really valid points, Paul. I love that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your feedback. Have a fantastic day.
And you too.
Jody Bash-McLean, thank you for giving us a lesson in etiquette, Jody. I love it.
My pleasure. I think we all just need to be kinder and considerate, and then I think the world's going to be a much better place.
Very wise words, Jody. Thank you, Jody, for speaking with us on The Conversation Hour.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
You too. On that note there, Jody was just talking about kindness. What a fantastic text here from Margaret. I'm a type 1 diabetic and my insulin pump controller looks like a phone, so I have to take it everywhere. I try not to use it, but sometimes I have to. Be kind to people because you never know if it's me next to you. From Margaret. Oh, Margaret. I love that. Making me feel bad now. I'll always be kind, Margaret. I promise next time to ask, do you need to use that device maybe? Lots of texts coming in. People saying, I'm forking out good money to go to one of the shows. I'll do whatever I like. Oh, I like that. Different point of view there. The excruciating thing is another text, when people's phone rings, they don't recognise their own ringtone. It goes on and on. That happened not long ago when I was in the theatre, and that happened.
This is The Conversation Hour with Georgie Coghlan.
Well, today Neil Danaher's family will formally say goodbye to the former Australian of the Year at a state funeral. ABC 774 station reporter Kate Mead is at the G where the state funeral is being held. Good morning, Kate. This is set to be both a very emotional yet unifying service. Kate, do we know who's going to be speaking?
We have a Master of Ceremonies in Hamish McLaughlin. We have Bonnie Anderson will be singing the national anthem. Jacinta Allen will be speaking. Jan Danaher and the children will be speaking, as well as Anthony Danaher will be giving a tribute. There are hundreds of people already lined up to be here today.
Kate, I don't know if you were at the game on Monday. My family and I went up to the Big Freeze. It was such an incredible experience. It was a mixture of grief, sadness, but there was this beautiful, powerful energy and the reflection of what one man can do and what one human can do. Can you get a sense, Kate, of what the mood is like there now? Are there people arriving early? What do you think the mood's going to be?
It's so similar to what you've just described. People are here to pay respect and to honour and also to celebrate, and that's the mood that's here. What has been nice to see is the care in detail. So we like to hear that there and see and experience that there are accessible entrances and care to that detail, but today it's a priority. Today, anyone with a wheelchair have first right through these doors, and then everyone, and there's many, many blue beanies here, are lined up behind.
I love that. I was just about to ask you, is there a sea of blue? Have you had a chance to have a chat with anyone there yet, Kate?
Yeah, look, I have. And many people have had an experience with M&D and, you know, celebrate the footballer, but it's the work that he's done. One person said to me, he could have got that diagnosis and traveled the world and lived his own life and done that. No one would have begrudged him for that.
Mm.
But instead, he's changed the world.
Mm.
That was the message. I've got the booklet, Georgie, in front of me at the moment, and on the back is a quote, and it says from Neil, "I hope to leave a legacy that says this, no matter the odds, no matter the diagnosis, we all have the power to fight, to smile, and to do. Because of the mark of a person isn't what they say, it's what they do."
Well, that is a beautiful way, oh goodness, to end talking to you, Kate. That is such a powerful message. I'm sure it's going to be an incredible service for an incredible man. Thank you so much, Kate Mead, ABC 774 station reporter. We appreciate you being there.
Thank you.
And of course, 774 ABC Melbourne will take you live to the MCG for the state funeral service of Neil Danaher. You can listen here from 1 o'clock on 774, or you can also listen on the Listen app or channel 25 on your television to celebrate the life of the 2025 Australian of the Year. What a remarkable man. You're listening to The Conversation Hour, and up next, are you one of the ever increasing number of people watching birds?
Conversation Hour.
This is where the conversation begins.
Well, it's wonderful and kind of extraordinary to see the lengths people will go to in pursuit of bird watching. So recent reports indicate that bird watchers in Perth have travelled over 400 kilometres to see a rare black-headed gull that's been spotted in the city of Geraldton. Apparently that's a rare sight. Now, you may not have travelled quite that distance, but do you watch birds? Are you a twitcher? So if you are a twitcher, why do you do it? I am a twitcher. I'm obsessed. What is it that keeps drawing you back? Is it the simple joy of watching them flit through the garden, listening to their bird song, or observing the fascinating ways they interact with each other? Dr. Kylie Sonzi is a bird life ambassador and urban biodiversity researcher at Melbourne University. Kylie, thank you so much for joining us on The Conversation Hour. Why are more and more people watching birds?
I mean, how could you not? Bird watching is such a pleasurable pursuit, but for a very long time, it had this aura of experts. Perhaps a softly spoken octogenarian in khaki with a pair of binoculars in some faraway wild. But it's recently become something that's much more accessible, much more everyday, and quite frankly, cooler. We're seeing many more people of younger age groups get into bird watching. People are doing it in their homes, in their workplaces, as well as taking those, you know, great big trips across the country or even internationally to see birds that are, you know, on their bucket list. So it's a really, it's something that brings people a lot of joy.
I love that you're telling me that I'm becoming cooler as I'm getting older, Kylie, if yeah. I'm being obsessed with birds. We've even got binoculars in our lounge room now. Like, that's how obsessed we are. So, Kylie, in terms of the data, is there any data that supports an uptick in bird watching in Australia?
Yeah, there is. Look, there's been an increase in reports to BirdLife Australia's bird data. The Great Aussie Bird Count is arguably one of the most popular citizen science events every year, regularly attracting more than 60,000 people. I think last year they had a record-breaking count of 5 million birds were counted.
Wow.
Through that 1 week, which is just incredible in the 13 years that has been running. And it's a pattern that we're seeing overseas as well. You know, the Royal Society for the Preservation of Birds in the UK has noticed a 40% increase since 2018, and the same thing in the US. And a large number of young people in that sort of 16 to 30 age bracket taking up the mantle.
Okay, before we get to that, the 16 to 30-year-olds, which fascinates me and gives me so much hope for the future, Kylie, let's go to Rowan from Toora in Victoria, called Straight In. Rowan, are you a bird watcher?
Yes, I'm a bird watcher, not a bird twitcher. They're a different breed of people.
Oh,
twitchers.
Okay, tell me the difference.
Well, I've been watching nature all my life and got into bird watching in the 80s. And I just love being out in the bush looking for stuff, and you get all these twitches who rock up and they see it, they tick it, tick the box, and they go off to the next one that tick the box and get life lists. And I just don't get it, but everyone's different, you know?
Oh, I love that, Rowan. So we obviously need the twitches to call in and defend themselves.
But yeah.
I love that, Rowan. Can you tell me, Rowan, what are your favourite birds to watch?
Well, yesterday I was down at Cape Liptrap looking for whales. I saw one humpback whale, but I was watching an albatross.
Oh.
A shy albatross, which is beautiful, which is your song, which is the start of the show. Yeah. Albatross, but yeah, just watching the shy. There's two shys down there, and a white-bellied seagull flew kind of above us and below us at the lighthouse. It's just a stunning day too. Just like being out there and looking for stuff.
Rob, before I let you go, what is it about bird watching that attracts you, and what do you feel when you're watching birds?
Oh, look, it's just being out there and, you know, smelling the roses, just being out in the environment and seeing what you can see. Now, it's a good litmus paper for what's going on in the environment. Birds turn up, why are they here? Or you see, don't see birds, say, why aren't they here? They should be here. It's a litmus paper on the environment in my books. But,
I love that.
It's just a humble bird watcher. I just love it.
We love humble bird watchers calling in, Rowan. Thank you for your call. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
I'm talking to Dr. Kylie Sloan about bird watching. Kylie, you mentioned that 16 to 30-year-olds, there's an increased number of people doing that. What do you think's happening there, particularly in this age of social media?
It's really interesting. And I think there's a few things that have come into play. I think, obviously, the pandemic for a while really changed the way that we were able to get outside and to access nature, or even to access anything outside of a certain radius of our homes. And for a lot of us, we turned our attention to what was actually already nearby us and around us. And it kind of flicked a switch for a lot of people in their heads to notice all this life that was buzzing through our backyards and our city spaces. And the thing is, once you flick that switch, it's really hard to flick it off. It kind of starts this pattern of noticing. And I think that has gotten a lot more people interested in the nature that's around them every day. It's also been really great to see the rise of community groups that are specifically focused on making birding a much more accessible and welcoming and inclusive practice. So groups like the Sydney Bird Club, they have deliberately focused on making an inclusive environment for birders. They host bird walks, they're very welcoming, and trying to make it something that everybody can participate and remove all of those mental hurdles of, well, I have to have the right binoculars and I have to have the field guide and I need to have sensible shoes and walk for 6 hours. So they're making it this much more just a really happy and joyful pursuit that people can get into.
Well, you're right, and the sort of the stereotypical twitcher or watcher is changing. Penrith Panthers NRL star Mitch Kenny, he's an avid bird watcher. He's a three-time premiership winning player, and he says that he uses birding as a really relaxing way, screen-free way to unwind from the sport. We know Rove is a big bird watcher. So it does help when we hear, we're not saying that those people are any more important, but we're saying that that changes the stereotypical understanding of who watches birds, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And like your previous caller said, there's a bit of a unspoken spectrum of bird watchers, from, you know, the bird noticer to the bird watcher to the twitcher that has a list and is out on a mission to see specific birds. Mm-hmm. And I think there's room for all of those different reasons to get amongst it, because we know that bird watching is really great for our mental health. I think something like even just half an hour of bird watching is really restorative. It can improve our health and well-being and foster a really deep sense of connection to nature. But when you combine that with people sharing what they see through citizen science platforms, it really helps improve our scientific understanding of birds, particularly in urban areas, which is really useful.
I'm talking to Dr. Kylie Sloan, BirdLife Ambassador. We're talking about bird watching, that more and more people are doing it. Give me a call, 1300 222 774, or a text. Do you watch birds? Are you a twitcher? and why do you love them? I'm really lucky, Kylie, in our neck of the woods out near Ballarat, we have beautiful black cockatoos. So we have the yellow-crested black cockatoos, and I have this flock that always comes before it rains. We've got wrens. We've got even finches. What are some of your favourite birds and why do you love them?
The yellow-tailed black cockatoos are always a favourite. I will hear that, you know, screeching pterodactyl call and drop whatever I'm doing and scan the skies until I can see them. Just, they're incredible, these flying bricks. But there's also a joy in just watching. Mundane is a very unfair word, but the everyday birds. I remember during one Aussie bird count, and that process asks you to sit still for 20 minutes and just count the birds that happen to come near you. And in that 20 minutes, I heard the red wattlebird, which is a really common urban bird that you'll see foraging in your grevillea. It made maybe about 30 different call sounds that I'd never heard before, and just watching the way that this flock interacted with each other and their crazy antics up in the trees, these absolute clowns. It was really, really peaceful moment just to be like, they have this whole other world happening that mostly we ignore. And I think that is one of my favourite aspects of bird watching, is just this glimpse into the life of these other creatures.
Well, you're right, Kylie, because the visual part is one of it for me. It's the way they interact with each other. It's their colours. It's the way that they get little bugs. But for me, maybe because I'm a singer, it's the song. So the songbirds and the harmony and the chorus that we get in the morning, for me, I think we forget how spoilt we are in Australia with songbirds.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even the mighty magpie, who I think took out top spot in last year's Aussie bird count. I remember distinctly last year a baby magpie in our local magpie family was practicing its song out the front of our house, and just to hear it sit there and give it a red hot crack and figure out what's its tune going to be, how is it going to warble, what other sounds is it going to incorporate into its unique song. It was a really lovely moment and just reminded you that they're not just, you know, cranking out monotonous tunes. They all have these individual songs and characteristics, and they're a real wonder to listen to.
Not that we want to give Collingwood any more credit than they deserve, so let's not go there, Kylie. Let's go to Stuart from Healesville. Hello, Stuart. You've just come back from a bird watching trip.
Bird watching and walking. I was watching superb layerbirds in the Cathedral Ranges, which were just, you know, well, superb. Oh, I can hear some black cockatoos.
I can hear.
I was going to say one of the things to differentiate between birders. Oh, you're distracting me,
Richard. Between Richard has gone birders. Down the rabbit hole of beautiful Australian songbirds. There, Stuart.
Indeed.
Sorry, you keep going, Stuart.
A difference between a birder, if you like, and a twitcher is, I think, a rare gull called the black-headed gull, which is silly because it's got a brown head, has just turned up in Western Australia.
I've read that.
And a bird watcher would go, oh, that's interesting. And a twitcher would go, how much are the flights? and that's the difference.
I love that.
You'll be able to tell from my accent that I'm hardly authentically Australian initially. But originally, I think twitcher had a sort of negative connotation. Oh, you know, darn twitchers. So the term twitcher has been appropriated by the media for all bird watching, and it always rankles.
I had no idea. I had no idea when I mentioned bird watching and twitching that this was happening.
They're not separate hobbies. They're branches of the same thing.
Okay.
But, you know, just anyway, that was my opinion.
I love it, Stuart. Thank you so much for your call. And you enjoy the memories of that lyrebird. How special.
Oh, splendid things.
Thank you, Stuart. You have a wonderful day.
Cheers. Bye.
Let's go to Kathy in the Bayside area. Hello, Kathy. Do you watch birds? You're a bird watcher or a bird twitcher?
Bird watcher, definitely not a twitcher. Not that organised to be a twitcher. But just it's a pleasure, you know, to watch the magpies, and they seem to know us and always sort of welcome us. And their bird song in the morning, and I love the currawongs when they call.
Yes.
And just in our little local area, we've had powerful owls, frogmouths, and the whole neighbourhood gets a real thrill. And also a little peewits that brought up a family at the beginning of the year. We watched them grow up and it was just really exciting. And my grandson's five, and he's taken it up now. He has magpies feeding out of his hand, so, and they actually talk to him.
How beautiful, Kathy. And then before you know it, Kathy, an hour's gone by where you and your grandson have just been so present together experiencing nature.
Yeah, it's a great way to get kids involved in nature and appreciate what it means, actually. Yeah, so.
Love it. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for the call, and keep enjoying your bird watching.
Thank you. Bye.
Dr. Kylie Sloan, we could keep talking forever. I think I need to have you back on bird. I think I need to have you back on bird watchers versus bird twitchers. Thank you so much, Kylie, for the wonderful work you're doing and for reminding us about how incredible our bird life here in Australia is. Thank you, Kylie, for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
You're listening to The Conversation Hour. It's Georgie Coghlan. Stay with us. Up next, we'll be talking about squash.
This is The Conversation Hour with Georgie Coghlan.
Now you look like a pro racquetballer. How's that shirt fit, all right?
Yeah, it's fine. You know, I was thinking maybe we could just sit and talk. I'm not really a big racquetball player.
No worries, we'll just get up a bit of a sweat. Have a few giggles. So I've been running the numbers. And I gotta say, things aren't looking too good for our end.
Bollocks! Jesus! Oh, I love it. Along came Polly, the film starring Brian Brown and Ben Stiller. Reminds me so much of squash. Were you ever into squash? Are you still into squash? Do your kids even know what squash is? Well, despite the sport making its Olympic debut at Los Angeles 2028, the sound of rubber reverberating off rackets and into the wall has for some become a distant memory. So do you still have a squash club in your town or your suburb? Australia is the most successful nation in squash history. We have 40 world championships under our belt, but can we return to the top of the international game? Well, joining me on The Conversation Hour this morning is Robert Donoghue, Squash Australia Chief Executive. Robert, thanks for joining us on The Conversation Hour. Are people still playing squash, Robert?
Thanks for having us, Georgie. Absolutely, they are. We've probably got about 200,000 people that play in any one week, whether that be in, you know, regular competitions or even just going down at a lunchtime and having a hit with a friend or a colleague. So, yeah, absolutely, still a thriving community.
So 200,000 doesn't mean anything to me, Robert, in terms of across the country. How many active squash clubs do we have, and has that understandably dropped off?
Oh, yeah, so there's about 550 venues that we've got across Australia at the moment. You know, from the heady days in the 80s and 90s when squash was in its boom, that's certainly a reduction. But I think like a lot of sports, you know, the reality of the world we live in now, then competing interests for time and technology and other interests that people have got. Mm-hmm. You know, sport has got that challenge of, well, you know, how do we remain relevant in people's lives? And in people's communities. And I think, you know, that sense of community and the camaraderie that comes with playing a sport and then the fitness elements to it, I think, are still really important to communities. And squash is certainly one of those sports that do that.
Robert, there used to be a time when there was a squash club in most suburbs and towns. Now, I'm from regional Victoria, and I still remember my parents playing squash at the Tarang Squash Club. It was always freezing cold, Robert, and it was always on private land and never council land. What was the reason sort of behind that?
Yeah, well, I'm convinced, having been in this role now for 5.5 years, that everyone's got a squash story, and similar to you, my mum and dad played, and I have very fond memories of sitting in squash centres throughout my childhood, watching them playing on, you know, weeknights and across weekends. And yeah, look, I think that was the model that the sport adopted back in the 80s and 90s. Obviously, there's a commercial reality to running those centres, and that was obviously something that was quite successful back then. But you know, the boom in commercial property values, and you know, the owners of those lands wanting to either capitalise on that or to, in some cases, you know, those owners have retired and that's their retirement plan and retirement fund, and they've got to that age where they need to you know, cash that in, for want of a better of a term. That's been, I guess, a reality for us over the last sort of 10 years in that it's put pressure on those facilities and the commercial realities of the returns you can get from running a squash court versus, you know, realising those commercial gains. I think one of the strategies that all sports, you know, are grappling with is how, how do we continue to build new facilities, and how do we, you know, access government and council funding to be part of shared facilities or new facilities, mm-hmm. that make sure the sports, you know, remain relevant in local towns and regional towns and even in the big cities.
You're listening to The Conversation Hour. It's Georgie Coghlan here. I'm talking to Robert Donohue, Squash Australia Chief Executive. We're talking about squash. Do you still play squash? Do your kids play squash? Do you still have a squash club in your suburb or your town? So, Robert, exciting news, though. I mean, it's not really news to you, of course, but it was news to me that squash will make its debut at the Los Angeles Olympics in 2028. That's pretty massive, yes?
It was huge news when that came through a couple of years ago, and the sport has been aspiring to be in the Olympics certainly since the 2000 games here in Australia, and given our success in the sport, I think there was recognition at that point in time that Australia may include squash in those Olympics. Mm-hmm. But I've tried ever since, and yeah, LA in 2028 will be our debut, and I think most excitingly, and for those who've got that nostalgia about the 80s and 90s, the squash sport will be at Universal Studios in front of the clock tower that featured in Back to the Future. So, iconic venue. Yeah.
Oh my goodness! The squash community must be beside themselves with that. That is so exciting. I'm just going to jump now to Joy from Dalesford. Good morning, Joy. Do you play squash?
Not at the moment because I'm of a particular age. But when I began teaching, I was sent down to Warrnambool, and I didn't know anything about sport or whatnot. But like all the young ones on the staff, introduced me to squash. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of those people were very competitive and played A grade and B grade and whatever it was. I just played social squash. And it was fantastic, not just for fitness, but for bringing, you know, our friends on the staff together. It was wonderful.
Oh, I love that, Joy. Did you find joy, because it's such a hard game, were you able to get any, if you had a really rough day, was it a great game to get all of that anger out?
I think it was, but I did something very unusual. I had a friend on the staff, and they moved to Charters Towers to work in a boarding school. And so when I got up there, I was quite bored. And I said, oh, look, I'll walk into town and see what's what. And so there was a guy in the squash court, and he was some Australian champion or whoever he was. And I said, can I have some lessons? And so he was great. He taught me how to get that blessed ball off the back wall, et cetera, et cetera. Now, who would have thought that you could learn from a champion in Charters Towers? But he changed the course of my game.
Look at you. I love it, Joy. You don't just do things by halves. That's fantastic. Joy, thank you so much for the call. Have a great day. Talking to Robert Donohue, Squash Australia Chief Executive, about squash, the sport. And, of course, Robert, not only are you excited about Los Angeles Olympics in 2028, we've got Brisbane Olympics in 2032. So what are you doing as a sport to capture as many young people as possible?
Yeah, look, I think, again, like most sports in Australia, we definitely want to be part of a home Olympic Games in Brisbane in 2032. And a lot of the work we're doing now is to capitalise on the fact that we're in LA, but also look with an eye to the future. And you know, we've got a new program now, Squash Stars, which is the introductory version, you know, of the sport for kids to come into the game. It's got, you know, a bouncier ball and a bigger racket that makes it easier, you know, to get the ball off the front wall.
Like a bit like an Oz kick in a way.
100%, yeah. And I think we know now that a lot of kids, and my kids were an example of this, that they try a lot of these programs as they're younger to try and find out which ones that they, you know, they love and want to continue with. And now we've got a program, I guess, that will help introduce the game to a new generation. And many of those whose parents played the game, or whose grandparents played the game, and then we're finding the real connection between generations there now, where parents and grandparents are rediscovering the game through their kids' involvement.
I'm just thinking, Robert, it might be a really good sport for marriage. You know, like we played at the top of the segment, Along Came Polly, that fantastic grab, and of course squash features in Wall Street, the wonderful film. So do you think that we maybe need to remind people that it's a great way to get frustration out? Because often when it's used in movies, Robert, it is about power and ambition. Maybe I need to introduce my husband and I going back for a game of squash when we're both annoying each other and get that frustration out in the court.
100%. I think that's one great thing about the game is you can play it pretty much with anyone. You can play it with your friend, your colleague, your wife, your partner, and even with your kids. And it's, you know, it's short and sharp, and you can get a good workout, or you get that frustration out and get back to daily life pretty quickly. So yeah, 100%. I think it's a great sport for families and to, you know, play with anyone, you know, that's looking for, you know, something new to do.
Now, how would you sell it to me if you had to tell me that, okay, Georgie, I want you to do squash over pickleball?
Well, I think the great thing about pickleball and paddle and squash and tennis even is that, you know, racket sports are being reinvigorated and you know, becoming cool again in a sense. And I think, like I was just saying before, I think the biggest sell for me is that, you know, it's short, it's sharp in a busy day. You can go down there and get a really quick workout. You can play it with your friend, you can play it with your partner, you can play it with your kids even. So it's a great, you know, connector of either families or colleagues and friends. And if you're looking for that, you know, that real fitness element, if someone that's craving, you know, a real workout, then it can give you that as well. So I think it ticks all the boxes of what we're looking for in, you know, modern sporting activities. And you know, in a I guess in a world now where, you know, time and cost are all pressures, squash is a great game to be able to fit into those and I guess alleviate some of those pressures.
Oh, Robert, see, squash is in good hands. That's why you are the chief executive of Squash Australia. Robert Donoghue, thank you so much and all the best for the lead up to the debut at the Los Angeles Olympics for the sport. I'm sure we're going to see more and more people hitting that ball. Thank you so much, Robert.
Thanks so much, Georgie.
Thank you so much for your company today. I've loved all your calls, all of your texts. Mary Guerin is back tomorrow. It's been fantastic to be here. Amber and Richard always hold my hand and help me so much when I float in from Ballarat, so it's been wonderful. Meals for Melbourne, don't forget you can drop off at Southbank 6 till 4 until this Friday, or you can donate to the virtual food pantry. Just text MEAL, M-E-A-L, to the text line, and 774 ABC Melbourne will be taking you live to the MCG for the state funeral of Neil Danaher. You can listen from 1 o'clock on 774.
So much for your company.
You can listen on the Listen app, of course, or Channel 25 on your television to celebrate the life of Neil Danaher, the 2025 Australian of the Year.